Welcome to Blue Dot, a look at our place in space. I'm Dave Schloem. 50 years ago, the United States was in the midst of the first human exploration of another world. The Apollo program explored the moon from orbit and its surface for 4 years, and 12 Americans walked on what Buzz Aldrin famously called its magnificent desolation. In the midst of all the anniversary celebrations of Apollo 11 last year, I began to think more deeply about the families of the men who went to the moon. Their wives were famously depicted in the ABC series The Astronauts' Wives Club. But what about the experiences of the children who grew up in what seemed a very normal fashion to them while in the midst of an extraordinary time in history when their fathers were pioneering the exploration of space in general and the moon in particular? Sadly, only 4 of the moonwalkers are still with us. Apollo 15 astronaut Dave Scott, Apollo 16 astronaut Charlie Duke, and Apollo 17's Harrison Schmitt. For the children of the moonwalkers that have left us, they are also faced with the task of carrying on their father's legacy, carrying the proverbial fire for their dads. Recently, I've had the great good fortune to become friends with Amy Bean. Her dad, Alan Bean, was the lunar module pilot for Apollo 12, which was the second successful moon landing. Sadly, he passed away in 2018. After helping us with our commemoration of Apollo 12 in November, Amy told me about her friendship with 2 other kids who grew up Apollo, that she's remained friends with to this day, Tracy Cernan Woolley and Gwen Griffin. Tracy's father, Gene Cernan, who passed away in 2017, was the last man to walk on the moon and the subject of the fine documentary The Last Man on the Moon, which came out in 2014. Gwen Griffin's father, Jerry, has been one of the greatest assets to our show in producing these programs about Project Apollo. Jerry was not only a flight controller and director during the Gemini and Apollo programs, but also went on to be director of the Johnson Space Center in Houston and also helps me land a lot of these amazing interviews. So after some conversations with Amy, we decided to set up a conversation with the 3 women, as well as a visit with Peter Conrad, whom you'll hear from later in the show. Peter's dad, Pete Conrad, was not only the 3rd man on the moon, but also one of the most colorful personalities in the astronaut corps. But first, let's talk to the 3 women who met as little girls at the height of the space race in the 1960s and early 70s. I will let them introduce themselves.
Well, my name is Amy Bean, and my father is astronaut Alan Bean. He was a 4th man to walk on the moon on Apollo 12 and commander of the Skylab 2 mission. And right now in my life, I'm part-time speaking about what life was like during the race to the moon for the families, talk a little bit sometimes about my dad's art, and just tell about the experiences of Apollo.
And Tracy?
Hi, yes, I'm Tracy Cernan Woolley, and my dad was Gene Cernan. He flew on Gemini 9, Apollo 10, and Apollo 17, where he was the last man to walk on the moon. And I currently am just a mom of 3 girls and a new grandmother.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
I'm Gwen Griffin. I'm the daughter of Jerry Griffin, who was a flight director for all of the Apollo missions. And I own a company by the name of Griffin Communications Group. And we work with a lot of the legacy and commercial space companies as we trek back into space and back to the moon with the Artemis program. And that keeps us busy here at Griffin.
Yeah, the next generation.
Yep.
I'd like to know, whoever would like to start, it's fine. I'd like to know some of your earliest memories of when you 3, you know, met. Can you set the stage for us and tell us about the neighborhoods that you lived in when your dads, you know, first moved to Houston and started working, you know, on Gemini and Apollo?
Well, this is Tracy, and Amy's and my dad were in the same group, and when they were selected, most of that group moved into Nassau Bay. So when we all built homes in the area in Nassau Bay, in our area, everyone lived really close together. We were all on the same street. Amy and I would live down the street from each other. We were 6 months old, and our moms used to stroll us down the street together. But we had Collins were a couple doors down from me. I lived next door to the Chaffees. The Gordons were across the street. Swikert. So all in the area was very close. So astronauts and then the other people in the area all were either flight directors or engineers, or most all were NASA people that lived in the neighborhood at that time. So.
And were those neighborhoods, you know, were they were kind of built for the space program, essentially, weren't they?
This is Amy. And yes, they were. You know, when we actually moved to this area in the NASA area, Space Center Houston wasn't even complete. It was still under construction. And before this, this was just cattle grazing land. And wasn't much down here, wasn't really any restaurants in the areas. There was some one grocery store, I remember it was the Piggly Wiggly in Clear Lake. And so these neighborhoods sprouted up because of NASA. And it was full of, you know, astronauts, people that worked at NASA, flight controllers, scientists, contractors for Grumman, North American. And that's who was down here. I mean, and over in Kiba, not too far away, was some, you know, shrimp boaters and fishermen, but it just became a population of very technical people, engineers and things.
This is Gwen, and I remember we've talked a lot about this over the years of, and Amy, I think you said it, where we were like, it was like a military community because most of our dads came from military backgrounds, and it was almost like being stationed somewhere. And the 90% of the neighborhood was somehow associated, as Amy and Tracy have said.
Any other thoughts on the neighborhoods growing up?
This is Gwen. And one of the things I remember the most as we were 5, 6, 7 years old was going to each other's houses. And for me, being a flight director kid, I knew it was pretty special to go to one of the my friend's houses when their dad was in space. And I recall, you know, one of the neat things about it was Tracy's house had a swimming pool and Amy's house had a swimming pool. We didn't have a swimming pool at a flight director's house. So it was one of those things where when monumental things were happening on orbit, we were busy swimming because we were 5, 6, 7 years old and we wanted to play. So it was pretty normal business for us.
Also, I always remember this, Tracy, and the bus stop for me was at the Collins house because they lived on the corner. So anytime it rained, all 25 of us, because there were a lot of kids riding the bus at that stop, we all would pile in to the front entry of the Collins house, waiting for the bus to get there before everybody would run out. So it was really, you know, it's like a regular neighborhood. I mean, no one grew up feeling more special than anyone else. We were all just went to school like as a normal kids.
And just for our listeners, the Collins house would be Michael Collins' house, the command module pilot for Apollo 11.
Yeah. And I think one other thing that I always think about, too, and growing up in that neighborhood is that, you know, in that generation, most of our mothers were home. And so I hardly ever remember seeing the fathers except on the weekends. And like Gwen's dad, Jerry, I wouldn't have had any idea as a child what he did, but I'll tell you what, I never saw him at his house. Just like she never saw my dad at our house because they were always busy working and they had to be, but I sure knew her mom. And so we kids were organized and taken care of by our mothers. And the dads came home on the weekends and the evenings for dinner.
Well, let's talk about your moms for a bit because, you know, there was that that amazing series, the First Wives Club. And talk a bit about the roles that the astronaut wives and flight controller wives played in the space program back then, because they really were this tremendous team member.
Yes, they were. I think, you know, the moms back then were the stability, I always say, and this is Tracy, by the way, I always say they were the stability that held the families together, that made the men be successful like they can, because the men didn't have to focus on the everyday routines of the families and keeping the kids in school and getting things done. They could focus on their job, and the moms were the backbone that paid the bills, did the yard work, did everything to keep the men going and to get them, keep them successful and let them focus on stuff. You know, Dave, my mom once said that if you think it's hard going to the moon, you ought to try staying home. And I think a lot of the wives would have said the exact same thing.
Yeah, because you're just, you know, you, all you can do is sit there and listen to it on the squawk box or, you know, the communication system that they installed in your home so you could listen to the mission or watch, you know, the occasional broadcast on television. But essentially, you're just waiting and hoping nothing goes terribly wrong.
I would say, too, this is Amy. My mother never was concerned, or she never showed any fear of concern of anything going wrong. You know, she had a lot of confidence in NASA, and our family did too. So I think that she really, she presented, and all the other wives did, they were role models for not only their families on how to handle the dangers of space and what was going on in the country, but role models for the country. You know, they'd get out there with the press and do an interview, and they would show that they were feeling good and they looked good and they were taking care of their families and they had confidence in their husbands and NASA and what was getting ready to be done. So I think that was setting a good example for the American people. You know, this is, you know, we have confidence in NASA and our country. We can do this. And so I think that was a very important role that they played.
Yeah. And I might add that, you know, from a historical perspective, that, you know, these were all military pilots. And though the space program was dangerous, and, you know, we did lose three astronauts in Apollo 1 in the fire in the test in January 1967, it's very likely that if they weren't in the space program, many of your dads would have been flying in Vietnam. And I know that Tracy's dad famously, you know, talked about that a lot. In fact, he even mentioned it to me one time when we were playing golf that, you know, he felt like, you know, he, in a way, felt guilty that he wasn't, you know, flying over Vietnam and getting all the accolades that he did going to the moon, although he certainly enjoyed being a part of that.
Yes. Yeah, he very definitely, he felt very guilty that he wasn't with his squadron flying in Vietnam. A lot of them got shot down, lost a few, and he felt very guilty because he felt like he was here in this bubble in the space program where you really, not that you weren't aware of what was going on at Vietnam, but you were living a whole different focus and life and not involved in that. And yes, they're all military, and otherwise I think they all would have been involved in that. Mm-hmm. But back inside, I will say on the mom side, you know, I know Amy and Gwen are the same. I mean, we ate dinner. My mom, we had a regular life. We ate dinner at the same time every day. We had our routines. And, you know, when my dad was in town, he was at dinner with us and did the same. When he wasn't there, it wasn't that much change. We sat down and watched Happy Days every night when it came on, because that was what was showing at that time. But it was really routine, and they were the ones that kept it that way.
Yeah, this is Gwen, and I remember in our little neighborhood in Nassau Bay, because it really is a small community. It seemed big when we were that age, but it's really a small community. Back when the heyday of all of Apollo, my mother happened to be the Cub Scout leader for Nassau Bay. And so a lot of the, you know, astronaut sons and the, you know, engineer sons and things, they would come over to our house and we would have Cub Scout meetings in our garage once a week, you know. And then all of a sudden they all became Weebelows. And by the time you're Weebelows, you didn't have a den mother. You had one of the fathers leading the den. Well, at that time, there were no guys that stepped up to volunteer to be the Weebelow den leader. So my mom was the Weebelow den leader. And, you know, so those were the kinds of things, I think, as we talk about our moms, that they were just willing to do whatever it took to keep us all together. And like you said, have dinner together. I remember when my dad, Jerry, would, you know, when he was home, I was very lucky, because when my dad was home, he was home, and he was my dad, you know, and I knew what he did was important, and I knew what Amy and Tracy's dads were doing, as well as my other friends whose dads were astronauts, you know, that it was really important. But it wasn't until I grew up, got out of college, and began to think and reflect back on it, how truly special It really was, and still is today.
Yeah, this is Tracy, Dave. You know, my dad would come home on Friday nights and Saturdays. We had a couple horses that weren't very far from here, and we would go out, and, you know, Friday night we'd go feed them. Saturday we'd go ride. I mean, he did definitely make up for the time when he was gone. You know, one time I had someone, you know, ask me what it was like to grow up in a dysfunctional family where your dad was never here. And I looked at him like so strangely, like, I didn't grow up in a dysfunctional family. My family was very, you know, very normal as far as being just together, even though he wasn't there every week. I didn't really notice that. So and then I think that's a tribute to the moms and
we
the routine.
Thought it was normal.
Yes. I didn't know any different.
You are listening to Blue Dot. I'm Dave Shlom. We're going to take a short break, but when we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Amy Bean, Tracy Cernan-Woolley, and Gwen Griffin. They grew up as Apollo kids. Stay with us. And we're back, and thanks for listening. Let's continue now as we talk to the daughters of moonwalkers and a flight director during Project Apollo, Amy Bean, Tracy Cernan-Woolley, and Gwen Griffin. It seems like, you know, from talking to you guys, that all three of your dads did make it a point when they were home to spend quality time with you.
I think they did. I think that's definitely true. And I was something that's come to my mind too, is I spent a lot of time with Tracy's dad, you know, Gene, because Tracy's the only child. And so her parents always were very social, doing things and going to events, and they would include me. So Tracy would have a friend. So I really felt close to Gene. In fact, because my father usually was, you know, more introverted, that when I was home or he was home, he would be reading a book or in his workshop or something. We wouldn't do anything. So Gene always took me places. So I felt very close to them. And I, when he passed away a couple of years ago, that was difficult for me too, because I had spent so much of my childhood with them riding their horses or just being together. And he taught me how to ride a horse. And so he was a big part of my life too. And that was important to me.
And yeah, Gwen, you mentioned, you know, your dad, since he probably didn't have to travel as much as the astronauts, you know, what was his schedule like? How often was he home?
Well, I remember that during a mission, he was home very little, because even though he was on console for a set number of hours during a flight, they all pretty much kept in touch and stayed close, particularly when there were any potential issues or significant milestones, of course. You know, they may not have been on console at the time as the lead flight director, but they were there together. And you see a lot of that footage in recent films this last summer with all the Apollo 50th, where you would see people sitting, you know, on the floor even, or just being in the control center. So there were times where, you know, oftentimes I was asleep before he came home and he would come home and then I wouldn't be, he was gone before I woke up to go to school in the morning. So the memories that I have the most were when we would take you know, we couldn't afford to go stay in hotels. We had a camper and we would go up to the Rocky Mountains as a family and camp. So, you know, I really, my quality time and my memories most were those where we had, you know, time away, or we had the privilege, Amy, Tracy, and I had the privilege of going to summer camp up in the Texas Hill Country together. And that's really when I got to know Amy and Tracy the best, because we went away to summer camp together for 5 weeks. And I remember our moms and sometimes our dads. I remember Tracy's dad dropping us off one time, you know, and it was a long drive for us. It was 5 hours and we were little kids and it was a long drive, and we went with our trunks off to camp for 5 weeks. And then, so it's those times that I think about our families. I think about how we formed these friendships that were different, and I didn't realize they were different until recent years.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about that, and as you've gotten older, and the perspective that comes with that, and of course all the attention that Project Apollo is rightfully getting now that we're 50 years out from it, and also got back in the 90s, for example, with the movie Apollo 13 and the From the Earth to the Moon series on HBO. When did it really start to dawn on you three that, you know, you were growing up in the part of something quite unusual and historic and special?
Well, this is Amy. I think, I know for me, and I would say probably for you, Tracy and Gwen too, I really don't think it was till after college. You know, you're a young person, you're a teenager, you're more self-absorbed, you're trying to make your own way in the world, be who you are, find that out. And so you didn't, you think, oh, I had a great childhood experience, but you really didn't think about how unique it was. It wasn't until you got out in the world and talked to other people. You know, you go off to college, you see people from different states, different walks of life, and they're like, oh my gosh, you know, then you see how different your world was and how you grew up and what a unique experience. I mean, you know, many people talk about Apollo being the impossible dream. And, you know, for us, we now know we lived through a time where we achieved the impossible dream. We saw it happen. We saw it, you know, moment by moment, even though we were just kids, we saw the work that had to be done and then the milestones that had to be achieved. And I think that really, that gives you a different perspective on life. Nothing seems impossible. I say that to myself, you know, if my dad could go to the moon, what can I do? Then that's nothing I can't do, really. And I think that's really the big impact. And I think that's made me think that, you know, I really had I witnessed a special time. And so that's how it's affected me.
Well, and this is Tracy. And also, I think, you know, we didn't, as you grow up and we went off to college and developed, worked, and did stuff, I had many friends that would come back to me and say, oh my God, I just heard that your dad walked on the moon, was an astronaut. And I'm like, oh, well, yeah. And they're like, why didn't you say that? I was like, well, because he's a regular dad. I don't go around saying, oh, my dad, so-and-so, he walked on the moon. And so I think we didn't, because I didn't feel like I grew up that, you know, that in that different of a circumstance. But I will tell you a funny story that when they were doing the Apollo 13 movie, Tom Hanks came to my dad's house and was talking to him with us. And we were all there, myself and my mom and my stepsisters, everything. And we're sitting there and we're visiting with him. And of course, Toy Story had been real big as well. And so we're like all in awe of Tom Hanks, and we're meeting Tom Hanks, and we're like, Dad had told me, no one can ask for a signature. No one can ask for a signature, you know? And so then we go there and finally we say, okay, you can have one. So he said, Mr. Hanks, can you please sign this? You know, he starts signing this Woody doll for us. And Tom says, you know, y'all are like, I am just an actor. You are standing here in the room with the last man to walk on the moon. You know, that's who you should be in awe of, not this actor. And, you know, we're like, oh, yeah. But, you know, but, you know, he's just our dad. He's just my dad, you know, that type of thing. So it's kind of funny that you didn't put yourself out there in that situation.
Hey, I think one of the real honors that we've all had this last summer in many ways, it's unfortunate for me, Alan Bean and Gene Cernan were two of my biggest cheerleaders in life and in my career. As a marketing and PR person, I've seen them over the years. My career has taken me back into doing outreach for youth to encourage them in STEM studies and space exploration. And I'm blessed to have my dad still with us today and pretty darn healthy and active in telling the stories and talking about his friends, Alan Bean and Pete Conrad and Gene Cernan. And I think the benefit of this last, of us living through the 50th anniversary celebrations has been something that I have been so humbled by, because I realize even at a different level, I'm much older now too than when I got out of college, but I realize now how truly impactful that era was for our nation and the world. And to hear the stories that I've heard at all these events the three of us have been to in the last year to 2 years, to, you know, the film about Gene's life, Last Man on the Moon. And it's just, for me, it's humbling. I've had a chance to be in the audience and listen to my dad talk about what they did. And, you know, when Apollo 12 got struck by lightning on the pad, and the humor that Pete always brought into everything, but also how Alan helped figure out the problem and they went on to the moon, you know, and I think, holy cow, that's pretty incredible. So for me, I have just had such a good time learning and also reconnecting and getting to know some of the other children of mm-hmm. Apollo mm-hmm. that I didn't necessarily grow up with, because my dad moved around the NASA facilities. And so we left here before I was in high school. And I grew up in Florida on the Space Coast and in California near the Mojave area. So for me to have to reconnect with the Lovell children, you know, the Conrad boys, in addition to spending more time with Amy and Tracy, has been really special and unique.
Oh, I agree. I agree, Gwen. This is Tracy. David, I will also say, as we've gotten older and as we have celebrated these anniversary, these 50th anniversary programs, I will say, you know, my dad was first and foremost a dad. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's what he was to me. And so what we did together were dad things. You know, we didn't talk about the space program that much. We didn't really talk about the space program that much at all. He did a lot of talks on it. I've heard many, many talks. But the older, now that he's gone also, the thing that I regret is I didn't sit down and actually ask him some questions. You know, it just is really, it's something that I do regret.
If you could ask him questions, what would you want to ask him?
Yeah, just ask him more about, maybe my dad became very, you know, emotional about, and he talked about being on the moon, and that's his, that was his home for 3 days, and how he could look back at his entire life, he could hide behind his thumb. He could hold his thumb up, and his entire life, his family, everything he knew was behind that thumb on the earth. And how, you know, you just have to look around, and he always said, you know, that's how, it doesn't matter what God you believe in, it wasn't made by accident. This was created by somebody with more power than anybody we know. And we're probably not the only universe around, because his line was, it was too beautiful to have happened by accident. But just to have known more deep feelings of what he might have felt and how it was. And, you know, I know. We talked about a little bit about when he wrote my initials on the moon and how it happened. I know what he did. But, you know, to be able to sit down and really listen to him tell it directly to me would be really neat. But
so he never like told you about that directly? Because it's a very famous scene in the From the Earth to the Moon series where he carves TDC, your initials, in the lunar regolith right before he gets ready to take that last step off the moon.
Yes. And he did. Yes, we did have conversations about it, but not, you know, really in deep. Like, I mean, I probably would say, you know, ask him, Dad, that was, you know, what were you thinking at that time? Of course, you know, he'd say, you know, he just wasn't thinking anything. You know, it was just a last minute thought, because he always told me, had he really thought it through or planned it, the one thing that he would have done, because, you know, he was setting up the camera to take the liftoff, picture of the liftoff. And when he got out of the rover, he just thought, I'm going to write our initials right here. They'll be here forever. Now, if he had thought about it, what he really would have done is kept a camera with him, taken a picture of those initials, walked to the moon. I mean, walked to the the lunar module, climb up the steps, take a picture of his last step, and then throw the camera out. Keep the film and throw the camera out. Yeah. But he said, you know, none of that was planned because they were so concerned about taking as many samples back as possible that that's why they left all the cameras everywhere. They weren't even bringing them home. But he said, had we thought about it, he said, I would have done those two things and we would have had the picture of the last step too.
Yeah. And of course, you know, with things like that, you know, hindsight is more than 20/20, and you have a lifetime to think about, gosh, I wished I would have done that. And I think that's just universally human. We can't always, you know, think of all the things we should do or could do that would have been perfect. It's just, especially as busy as they were, every moment they spent was basically planned.
Right. No, I agree with you there, this Tracy still, but I also, you know, for me looking back at it, you know, that was always what to me was most meaningful, is that they had all this important stuff to do. They were constantly thinking about what was the next moment. They really weren't getting any, you know, much sleep, but still in the back of their mind, we were there.
Well, someday, I hope that I have friends that are space archaeologists like Lisa Westwood that want to make sure that we preserve especially the Apollo 11 and 17 sites on the moon so that they're never disturbed. But it would be neat to find a way to unobtrusively go to the Apollo 17 site and find those initials and photograph it, because like, that could happen someday.
Well, I hope it happens in my lifetime.
Me too.
You know, Dave, I wanted to add something there. One of the things Dad used to say is they were a bunch of engineers and scientists that went to the moon. You know, their brains are thinking in a left brain way. They're thinking data. They're thinking science. And he said, you know, I wish that we had thought to do more human emotional things there. And that, of course, was something he used to do with his art. He would sometimes paint pictures with an artistic license to add a little bit more human emotional element. You know, you think about a lot of the things we remember from the moon and, you know, Alan Shepard hitting his golf ball or Tracy's dad writing the initials. And we remember those human things. And so I hope that, you know, when we go back to the moon, that they will incorporate a little bit more of that so that people can relate to that. Because, you know, that's something that we relate to and is so much as a part of who we are inside. It isn't just the scientific data. All, of course, that's super important. And that, but so maybe they have a little bit more fun. You know, Dad used to say, wish they'd taken a football and thrown it, he and Pete. So I think that's it. And one thing about Dad, Gene writing those initials, I had to say, I of course don't know all the moonwalkers that well, but Gene was more of a emotional person. He was definitely more somebody, I think he thought about Tracy a lot. I think a lot of the other guys were more scientific engineered, maybe not all of them, but Gene was definitely had a different look. So it doesn't surprise me that he thought of Tracy when he was there and did that. That was really, really such an essential part of him being a father.
Well, you know, he always told me he'd send me a moonbeam. Mm-hmm. So I guess that's what my moonbeam was.
Yeah. Have you guys visited the Memorial Grove there yet?
No. Oh, well, yes, I've been before, but we're going this afternoon.
Could you tell our listeners about that, what that's all about?
Well, I'll just say a little bit, you know, the astronaut Memorial Grove, I don't guess they have other people from NASA that they planted trees. Is that right, everybody?
It's only astronauts.
Astronauts. Okay, correct me there. And so they had planted a tree. It's in the front part of the, near the NASA entrance. And so the astronauts that have passed away, whether they had died in duty, like on Challenger, or they had, you know, passed away from old age, like my dad and Gene, they plant a tree there to remember them. And at Christmas time, they put lights on the trees, you know, to make it pretty and, you know, celebrate the season. And so one of the fun things, as you probably know, is that Pete Conrad's tree has red lights because one of his famous sayings is, if you can't be good, be colorful. And then this year, they added a tree with multicolored lights for my dad to represent his artistic leanings and the colors that he used in his painting.
Oh, wow. Yeah. No, that's very appropriate. And I love the fact that it was your dad who, when he was talking about putting the lights on, the red lights on Pete Conrad's tree, he basically kind of channeled Pete from the great beyond. And said, yeah, it's like Pete wants us to make his tree colorful, so we're going to do that.
Yeah, that seems to be a very memorable speech done at NASA to celebrate Pete. And of course, Pete was a you know, very memorable person. There wasn't a guy, you never met a guy that didn't like him. He was a fun astronaut, smart too, great astronaut.
Yeah,
good pilot. Yes. Mm-hmm.
But before we go away from you, and I hate to cut this conversation short, but we only have a few more minutes. Now that you've gone through all this, I'd like to know, you know, what does it mean to you three, you know, to just to be friends and to be able to share this time together and connect and reconnect? Tell us about just what your friendship with each other means to you.
Well, this is Gwen, and I have to say, because we moved when I was still in elementary school and started our trek around the NASA centers in my dad's career, you know, I am so in awe of the fact that Amy and Tracy have been friends since we were all 6 months old, and they're still the best of friends today, and grew up together, went to high school together, went to college together, were in the same sorority together. And I just, now that we've reconnected, I'm like, my goodness, you guys are really twins from another mother and another father. So I think it's so special. And for me, being able to have played a small role in our community and our history together and to be in constant touch with them again is really quite special. So it's pretty neat.
Yeah, this is Tracy here, and yes, to be back together and be associated and see each other more often, this has been great. And Amy and I, yes, we have been together since 6 months old, and it's a friendship that has lasted over 50 years, and one that will continue, but. We have our kids are know each other. Our kids are friends, and even though we went different ways after college, as far as works and marriages and stuff, we circle back around. And I think it's real important now too, because this is with all this celebration. We're Amy and I and Gwen as well. We're enjoying all this promoting the legacy and being able to tell what is happening and make sure people remember this Apollo times and what happened then. And I hope our dads want people to remember and wanted to excite people about it and keep people going. You know, my dad always used to tell people, just always remember, all I wanted to do was fly off of aircraft carriers. Never in my mind did I think I would go to the moon. So if you just put your mind to something, you can do it. You can do whatever you want to do. And, you know, one of the last things, Amy's dad, I had a conversation with him, and we were talking, and Amy and I were talking about doing something, and he said, you two put your heads together. You can do anything you want, and you keep telling people all about what you did when you were growing up. Yeah. So. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's kind of fun, and we've had a good time together, and being able to remember and reminisce and hopefully excite some people.
This is Gwen, and I'd like to just end my thoughts along those lines. Is it's been great to look back, but what's really neat to me and with what I do in my job and my career, to excite people about space exploration again, where we're going. And I thought when we retired the space shuttle that maybe in my lifetime, I may not see us do anything big and bold again. And I am so excited about the Artemis program and our return to the moon and on to Mars. And not only from the NASA government perspective, but from the commercial industry that's emerging. And it is so rewarding to see the young people working in mission control today. That, you know, my dad was 28 years old, 29 years old, 30 years old when he was a lead flight director. I mean, that's pretty crazy when I think about it. And I'm now seeing young people. So for me to see, it's an honor to their legacy to see people excited about it again. So for me, that's a huge gift.
Yeah. And I'll just end here. Amy here. I don't know. There's nothing like your kids, your friends you make in childhood. You know, you just have that experience. You like, you know, they knew your parents, they knew your grandparents, you hung out together in some of the easiest times in your life. You like, you know, you built your foundation together. And they just saw you in a different place and a place that impacts you really for the rest of your life. And I feel blessed that these two women were in my life then and they're in my life now. And somehow I think if we talk again in another 20 years, well, they'll probably still be here. We'll just have a few more wrinkles.
Well, thanks so much to the three of you. And, when I saw that picture that Amy sent me of the three of you together, it just was a kind of an epiphany. It's like, I have to talk to the three of them together.
Were we in our bathing suits were six?
I think we still have those same personalities too. Yeah. You know, you change a little bit, but you're kind of who you are. That's what Dad used to say. I think we're trapped being who we are from a very young age.
That's right. Well, thank you, Dave. This has been great.
Thanks. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. And I hope you have a meaningful experience at the Memorial Grove tonight.
Oh, yes.
We will.
I'm sure we will.
Let's take another short break. I'm Dave Shlom, and you are listening to Blue Dot as we look back at what it was like to grow up in the space program during Project Apollo 50 years ago. Stay with us. And we're back. Let's continue now on our conversation with the Apollo kids. Finally, we are joined by Peter Conrad. His father, Pete Conrad, was one of the most senior and experienced astronauts in the space program back in the 60s and 70s, having flown two Gemini missions, Gemini 5 and commander of Gemini 12, and commander of Apollo 12 and the third man to walk on the moon, as well as being the commander of the Skylab 2 mission. Conrad was killed in a motorcycle accident in Southern California in 1999. His son, Peter, joins us from Houston, Texas.
Okay, hi, Dave. This is Peter Conrad. I'm the son of Charles Pete Conrad, Jr. So,
I've heard of him. I believe he walked on the moon. Third man on the moon.
Yeah, that's what he told me.
Yeah. And of all the astronauts, he was one of the most colorful and iconic and had such a amazing personality that came across. There was nothing that's ever seemed boring to me, but he was your dad. So could you tell us, you know, what was he like as a dad for you?
Oh, he was pretty fun to be around. He also was a disciplinarian though. So, you know, we had fun, but when we were bad, we learned about how to be good again.
He had that military attitude. You actually went to military school, didn't you?
Yes, I did. I went to Texas Military Institute in San Antonio, which was a couple hundred miles away from where we grew up, or where I grew up. And he would come over and watch me play football. He'd fly in a T-38 over there.
Wow. So, yeah. Tell us about some of the things that you really like to do with your dad, because it seems to me like you guys had a lot of really good times in the outdoors together.
Well, I did. I can tell you that I was old enough to go with him in the last Gemini mission that he was on. I used to go with him on Saturday mornings and fly with him in the simulator and practice takeoffs, you know, or liftoffs. And the old Gemini capsule had ejection seats, so they'd pull a failure on us and we'd get to eject and it would stop the whole thing. So I'd spend Saturdays with him doing that. And then when I was about 14, I guess he was practicing landing on the moon, and I did a lot of landings on the moon with him in the LIM simulator.
Wow. Could you tell us, you know, for those of us who don't know exactly, can you describe to us what that was like, what the simulator was like?
I guess I can tell you they had the moon's surface, they had a kind of a model of the moon's surface. They put it on the moon, on the roof of the building, and they had a camera that was very movable. And then in the LIM simulator, the windows were TV screens. And so if you moved around with the stick, the movie camera moved over the moon's surface. And so it would go up and down and go forward and backwards. So you could actually act like you were flying on the moon and landing on the moon with that simulator.
Yeah, and nowadays with all of the video game technology, that may not sound impressive, but back in the 1960s, that really was.
Yeah, it was pretty realistic, actually.
Yeah. Could you tell us what it was like just to kind of be in there with your dad? Did you just have to be quiet and listen and watch, or did you get to interact with him at all?
Oh, pretty much. I mean, if he asked me a question or something, you know, sometimes he could play a little bit with us if it was on Saturday morning.
Uh-huh.
You know, but... you know, we used to fly with him, too. I mean, he had a friend of his that had an old biplane out here that we used to go fly in on Saturdays and stuff. And so, you know, it's either a simulator or a real airplane. So.
Wow. And yeah. And, you know, at his heart, and almost all the astronauts, they're pilots above all.
All right.
Yeah. And how about some of the outdoor things you like to do together? You guys did a lot of hunting, fishing, that kind of thing, spent time together, because you were kind of the oldest son, and I imagine your experience is a little different than from the ladies.
He spent a lot of time with all four of us. I mean, if we went hunting, sometimes he'd take two of us. But we hunted, my mother was from a small ranch outside of San Antonio, and we used to spend a lot of our vacation times there hunting deer and stuff like that. And we had horses out there, so we liked to ride horses and play cowboy and Indians with each other.
So when your dad was flying his missions, you were old enough to be, you know, really aware of what was going on. Were you at some of the launches? Were you at the launch of Apollo 12, for example?
Yes, I was. We were on a boat, which was a big mistake. The Armstrong family went out on a boat, and it was a beautiful day when Apollo 11 took off. But we went out on a boat. We thought we could get closer, and it would be much prettier to watch the rocket from this little yacht that we were on. And unfortunately, the weather was horrible, and all we could see was the lightning strike the rocket. And then we didn't have any way of knowing what happened after that till we got back to port there. So it was not very smart.
So you did see the lightning hit the Saturn V?
Oh, yeah.
Did it occur to you at that time that could be a really bad thing?
Well, I guess. I mean, all we could think about at that point was to turn around and see if we could get home, find out what was going on.
Uh-huh. And at any time when, you know, your dad was flying his missions, did you feel any kind of apprehension, fear that, you know, he may not come back? Because it was dangerous.
Oh, just a minute or so right before liftoff, and maybe a minute or so till you saw the chutes open on every entry, but that's about it.
Yeah. And as time has gone by, and your father passed away in a motorcycle accident, tragically, in the 1990s, what's it been like for you, you know, to kind of, as you're watching all of this stuff unfold with the 50th anniversary of Apollo 11 and now Apollo 12 this past month, what's it been like for you, you know, to think about the legacy of what your dad did and what an incredible time that was that you lived through?
Well, it has brought back a lot of memories. I mean, I've been pretty far away from all this for the last 50 years. So it's been probably unique to look back and see a lot of these children that I grew up with and visit with them, and been really great.
And so you're going to be going to the Memorial Grove tonight too. Is this going to be the first time for you?
Yes, sir. I'd like to see the red lights. I've always heard about it, so yeah, it's a good time to go look at them.
The famous red lights on your dad's tree. You told me a story. I hope you don't mind sharing with us about later on. Your dad took you to Bohemian Grove, and for those of our listeners who don't know, that's a very exclusive get together of very powerful people in Northern California. It's kind of almost a secret society get together thing. Could you tell us a little bit about what that was like and who you saw there?
Yes, it was pretty unique. It's actually, as you said, it's a very unique, immense club. But to me, it was like a bunch of men going to camp for 2 weeks. You know, so they camped out, but there was a lot of famous people there. And I ate dinner with Richard Nixon, and I met Reagan there, President Reagan. And, you know, I'd be walking down the street, and there was Patrick Wayne, John Wayne's oldest son, walking down the street there. I mean, there was everybody there was famous.
Yeah.
So.
And your dad was too.
Well, I didn't think about that. I saw these other famous people. So.
Yeah. Yeah, that's funny. When it's your dad, you don't think about it that way. And he was funny. I remember, you know, he was always quick with jokes, and, you know, he was a lot of fun to listen to. If you listen to the transcripts, the audio recordings of them on the way to the moon and on the way back, he's fun to listen to. He's a very entertaining person.
Yeah, he was cool. He had a personality. I kind of got my mother, so I'm not as big a personality as he was. He was a small man, so he wanted to show you how big he could be in real life.
Thanks once again to all of our guests, Amy Bean, Tracy Cernan-Woolley, Gwen Griffin, and Peter Conrad. And a special thanks to Griffin Communications Group for the remote audio recording of this program from Houston, Texas. I know I also grew up as an Apollo kid, even though my parents didn't work for the space program. Maybe that's why I've always really liked the Bryan Adams song, The Summer of 69. Blue Dot is a production of North State Public Radio in beautiful and talented Northern California. You can revisit this or past episodes you missed at mynspr.org, or better yet, subscribe to our podcast on the NPR One app or wherever you get your podcast groove on. We are distributed by the Public Radio Exchange, better known as PRX. Our theme music is by Matt Schultz. Blue Dot is engineered and produced by the maestro, Mr. Matt Fidler. Our associate producer and owner of a dog named Rocket that's about to become a mom is Ellie Johnson. For all of us here, I remind you there that from deep space, we all live on a pale blue dot.